We've been on the husband and wife relationship, and this morning we're going to start the communication between the husband and the wife. of course, in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, we've looked at several times, and we'll continue to look at that and apply that to the marriage relationship. And it says, "You husbands in the same way, live with your wives with an understanding way as with someone weaker since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life so that your prayers will not be hindered." So we know here again that it's dwelling with our wives according to knowledge. The goal of every man and woman who get married, bride or groom here, should be to reach that golden anniversary and beyond. That should be the goal of that. As we've discussed several times in the past few weeks, so many marriages end in divorce. One of the leading causes, besides finances, is poor communication. Is probably the top one. Whether you don't talk about your finances, because finances causes the most arguments, however, but communication is extremely important. It says, "Dwell according to knowledge" involves a necessary inference that there must be knowledge there. A wife must know her husband in a way that she knows how to communicate to him. Same way with a husband. She knows his wife in such a way that he could communicate with her. And to communicate, meaning to communicate in a way not degrading or dishonoring one another, but have an open communication line. Our open communication line with God is prayer. If you spoke to God the way you speak to your spouse, what would that sound like? When you pray to God the Father, that is communicating with Him. What would it sound like if you spoke to God in the same manner as you speak to your spouse? Would your prayers be hindered? Or would they be honest and sincere and respectful to one another? I submit to you that it is up to both the husband and the wife to communicate with one another. It's just not the husband's responsibility to talk to the wife. It's just not the wife's responsibility to talk to the husband. The husband should know what pleases the wife, and the wife should know what pleases her husband. The command to be not bitter against her and to provoke your children and provoke not your children to wrath are ways of saying that the man is to promote unity in his family. Unity is necessary ingredient to any successful endeavor, whether it's at work, whether it's coaching a baseball team, a congregation, and especially with your family. In Matthew 12, in verse 25, "And knowing their thoughts, Jesus said to them, any kingdom divided against itself is laid waste, and any city or house divided against itself will not stand." A house divided against itself will not stand. When the husband and the wife are bickering between each other, not allowing God to be the priority in their lives, will destroy the family. Children do not need to hear a constant bickering between their mom and their dad. Are there going to be problems? Yes. First of all, we need to know and understand that there is no perfect marriage. There's going to be arguments. There's going to be disagreements. But if as much as possible, your children should not be witness to those arguments, to those disagreements. They need to feel secure. However, the husband and the wife must communicate. When you get married, in that first 6 months to a year, most people say is the worst. Because you're getting to know each other. And you may have more arguments then than the rest of the marriage, is what I've heard. However, I disagree with that. The first marriage, you're in your honeymoon stage. I think a lot of times you're afraid to make the other one mad. You're getting to know one another. You don't want to argue. Because you just got married. And you don't want any arguments. You don't want any altercations and so forth. However, the more you go along, the closer you ought to grow to one another. But along that journey, there's going to be ups. And there's going to be downs. You're going to argue because you will not always agree on every single thing. And then when you put children in the midst of it, then it could cause more arguing. Because one parent doesn't like how the other parent disciplines, or the lack thereof, their children. It can cause arguing. So then you have the argument of finances. You have the argument of children. And then before you know it, you stop communicating with one another. You think, what's the use? It doesn't matter anyway. But non-communication does not mean absolute silence. A couple may deceive themselves into thinking they are communicating when they are not. Superficial conversation is not communication. Any questions or comments on that? Brother Jacket? Right. Exactly. Right.
So I think that's if we are communicating with God, I think the probability is very high that our communication is unstopped. So talking and listening is going to be what it should be.
Exactly. Right. Right, I do agree with it. And listening is a whole part of communicating. When our spouse is trying to tell us something and talking to us, are we truly listening? Or are we thinking about how we're going to respond? I'll get her on this one. And you're sitting there thinking of what you're going to say back instead of truly listening to what is being said. And so listening is very important in communicating with one another. And when we stop listening, We stop hearing, and then we stop talking, and the communication ends. But there are some communication blocks that I want us to look at. Things that block our communication with our spouses. For the next few minutes and possibly going into next week, we'll be looking at some possible causes of communication breakdown in the marriage. First one is an uncontrolled temper. I think that that is probably more prevalent than what we think. But a husband or wife may have a terrible temper. One or the other may be reluctant to discuss matters that could involve controversy, knowing what the aftermath of that discussion will be. Turn to the book of Proverbs, Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29, verse 22, states, "An angry man stirs up strife, and a hot-tempered man abounds in transgression." An angry man stirreth up strife. It is difficult to fathom the disasters caused by an uncontrolled temper. For example, prisons are literally filled with people who cannot control their temper. And that's where it comes from. They cannot control their temper, their emotions, to the extent where it caused them to do things that would get them in that type of trouble. Some are there due to what they did to their own families. In Proverbs 11, for example, verse 29, "He who troubles his own house will inherit wind, and the foolish will be servant to the wise-hearted." So a fool's wrath is presently known. There are spouse abuse centers. There are orphanage and foster homes that also attest to the great destroyer of bad tempers. No self-control at all. These type of marriages are built on fear due to the tempers. Most of those marriages end in divorce. Sometimes one ends up in prison, or even worse, one ends up dead. In some cases, they stay together in constant misery. And in some cases, suicide is the result. The only solution is for one with a horrible temper that they must learn. They must learn to control that. To control their weakness, because that's exactly what it is a weakness. The Bible offers a solution for this very problem. The one who is not high-tempered, though, should be careful not to unnecessarily provoke that other person's weakness. However, a spouse should never be afraid to talk to their spouse about problems or issues without fear of, quote-unquote, getting in trouble by their spouse. A husband and a wife should not fear one another in conversation. A husband or wife should not bully over the other. That is not how God designed the marriage. We've discussed several times about how the wife is to be in subjection to her husband. That's when the husband is in subjection to Christ. Not when he's in subjection to Satan. In in Proverbs 15, in verse 1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. As I said earlier, sometimes Brother Jacob brought up the listening part. Are we more concerned with how we're going to respond than what we're listening to? A soft answer turns away the wrath. But grievous words stir up anger. So when you sit there thinking of your revenge statement or sentence, then you are using grievous words and you're stirring up the anger of the other person. This thought is worth to marvel at. What could this be? What would this world be without the uncontrolled tempers? How full would the prisons be if people would just control their tempers on things? How many less divorces would there be, broken families, if one or both spouses learn to control their tempers? One cannot justify their uncontrolled rage by blaming that on another as well. In Ephesians 4, Ephesians 4, verse 26. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Be angry and sin not. Great example is Christ. Were there times that Christ got angry? When did he? In the temple. What happened? Right, a marketplace. What did Christ do? Did he sin? Did he sin while doing that? No. Did he get his point across? He got his point across, but he did not sin. There is such a danger that one will sin when angry. Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath. This part of the verse should also be heeded in the marriage relationship, in the family relationship. I don't know, a couple weeks back, I mentioned that. Those that have teenagers probably have had those same late nights. And if you hadn't, you will. But don't go to bed angry. You have to stay up to 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning until the sun rises the next morning to pray, discuss, cry, scream, and yell, and sin not. Then you do what it takes. But do not let the sun go down upon your wrath. The thing in our house is that when we leave for work, when we leave going on a trip or whatever, what is the last thing that you want your spouse or your child to remember you by? If something was to happen, because after all, we're not promised a tomorrow. Is it angry words? Is it a hateful comment? And the young people as well. Do you want your parents, the last word they hear is, I hate you, I wish I had other parents? let not the sun go down upon your wrath. I think that's very important to not just the marriage relationship, but to the family relationship. No couple should go to sleep without clearing the air of controversy. Which one would be the courageous one to talk about the issue or the problem, rather than ignoring the problem and pretend it doesn't exist? Because when you get up the next morning, the problem's still there. The issues, they still exist. But when you talk about the issue of the problem, rather than trying to heap discomfort on the other. Marriage is more than a hug and kiss. Marriage is more than a physical attraction. Again, marriage is 100%. It's not 50-50. In Proverbs 16, verse 32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. Self-control with the husband or the wife is much needed in the marriage. We must learn to use self-control. Part of that self-control that I'm still learning, for example, is necessarily not the words that I say, it's the tone of which you say them in. You would think after 22 years I would figure that one out. However, there are times that the tone is not what it should be. There are times when our words should not be what they are. There are times our temper isn't what it should be. And then we all like to use the excuse, that's my wife, that's my child, they know me. I had a bad day at work, they'll understand. I'll just take everything out on them. Because they can't fire me from my job. Why is it that we take out our frustrations on the people that we are supposed to care about the most? Any questions or comments on that? Right. Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. When you bring God into the equation, then what happens to that argument? Dwindles away. Kurt? And that's a very good point, because when we talk about being angry and sin not, I don't want you to think that I'm sitting here saying, well, you can yell at your wife or your husband all day long, but you don't say any bad words. You don't tell them you hate them and wish them dead, but you're still yelling and screaming at them. Or the least little problem comes up, that's always your answer, by yelling and screaming. So I'm not saying that's the way to do it, because that within itself is a problem. You should be able to, if you claim to be the Christian you claim to be, then you must live that Christian life. You have to live that Christian life. And part of that is setting that example for others. And it's setting that example behind closed doors. Not in here. Not at Walmart. Not at a restaurant. By getting out of the car, opening the door for your wife. And then yell at her once you get home because she spent too much money on her dinner that night. Or whatever the case may be. Brother Todd? Right. Who you lay down with and sleep with each night? Your co-worker or your spouse? Who are you going to wake up to look at the next morning? First thing in the morning. There should be a level of respect there towards your spouse. It should be demonstrated. Objective.
I mean, self gets in the way in our marriages, in every relationship, in every problem. Anger is just, I mean, self
Right.
So I think we have to have everything all the way, right, everything wrong. I'm not saying there are things that are sin, but there's a lot of little things that come along every day. It's better for us to just set that out. And those things really don't matter in the long run anyway.
Right. Mark?
Kind of along with what Jacob just said, Proverbs 17, verse 14 says, "The beginning of strife is like letting out water, so abandon the quarrel before it breaks out." You know, there could be something that if you let it go too long, you're going to be able to tear it back up, put it back in. It's out there.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Brother Dave?
Another proverb, which there's several on this subject, but in 14, verse 29, it says, "He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive or quick tempered exalts folly." Then over in James 1, verse 19 says, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God." Something that we're going to talk about. And wrath doesn't always come in an outward expression or anger or words. Sometimes wrath comes in another form. We ignore our spouse. We give them the silence treatment. Or we make decisions contrary, knowingly contrary to their wishes or something like that. Being spiteful. So wrath has many forms, many faces, but not always a outburst of anger.
Exactly. Well, it's pulling up on my phone. Most things you can probably see from there. Reminded Teresa's wedding photo. If you and your spouse don't have this with you, either put it on your phone or have one in your wallet. Regardless if you've been married 6 months, 6 years, 20 years, or 50, do you still look at your spouse the same way? She's still your bride? Is he still your groom? The physical appearance may change, but the inward person should have grown. So we must not lose sight of that. I have that on my phone ever since I've had a phone that was able to hold pictures. I've had that, and so does Duke has one in his wallet. I think that's very important. Keep that with you at all times. During those times, and then you're driving to work and you're mad, you get it out, you look at it like, oh, yeah. Isn't she beautiful? That's my wife. This is stupid. I should not be angry right now. I really got mad about that. You find out that a lot of the things that you are quick-tempered about are foolish. Little things that really don't mount up with all the problems and cares of this world and with the other important stuff in that family, such as raising your children in a godly home, such as the husband being the spiritual leader. And when you pray, do you pray for your relationship with your spouse to grow stronger? Or is that seldom, if ever, in your prayer? Keep that picture with you. And when tempers flare, get it out. That's still your bride and he's still your groom. And we don't need to let things cloud up our view of what we have. And I think that's very important for us. Any other questions or comments on the temper? Brother Kevin? Oh, you go ahead. Exactly.
And if you're, a lot of times, if you're angry that much, it's probably you. And, you got to figure out how to be content with what you have and figure that out and fix that. We talked about that before. But we're in a culture now of, if you're content, you're weird.
Right.
You don't have dreams and goals. And you because you're happy where you're at.
Exactly.
Because that gets you in trouble too. Why don't you act like that? Or why don't you, and we run into that both in comparing the world marriage, but we also run into it in comparing other marriages within our church family, and that could be even more devastating than maybe even comparing the world depending on what you're saying. So I think contentment is a big thing and it's parallel to contentment.
Right. Yeah. I do agree. You must be content with what you have. And again, the whole thing of, well, I fell out of love with them. Well, you better fall back in love. It's a learned behavior. Something you don't fall in one day and fall out 10 years later. You should love your spouse more today than you did on the day that you got married. You should grow each and every day. Any other questions or comments? We'll get into the second block, the communication with marriage. And I'm sure that no one here has ever used sarcasm with their spouse. Huh? Yeah. Have you used sarcasm before with your spouse? There's an appropriate time that you can, from time to time, but not with every situation. This is listed as one of the first communication blocks by an author on marriage. However, this author, when I looked up his name and looking at it, he's on his third wife, so I don't know for sure whether or not what he's saying is true. However, he's a marriage counselor, apparently. But the people who come to him said that sarcasm from their spouse can really heat up a conversation. It has been observed that most of us are sarcastic people, but this can be extremely damaging in a marriage. Sarcasm is not merely having a good sense of humor and thinking that takes care of the issue or the problem, because it doesn't always. Exactly. And that's what that will do. If a person not fully aware of themselves, they may punish the ones they really love and care about the most. Again, sarcasm is not bad per se. It just depends on when and how often it is used. When used only in the light of frivolous moments, it can add spice and it can add fun to a conversation. When there is a suffering after a marriage, there's a real need for real and deep communication. And the sarcasm, the jokes need to go away. Sarcasm is not only out of place, but it's painful. And then it makes communication impossible. When this happens, your spouse may begin to think, why bother to discuss this problem? We're just going to be sarcastic about it anyway. All I'm going to get is sarcasm. When this happens, the communication is then shut down. So we need to be careful when we do use sarcasm, when and how often, and the appropriate time especially. But we will pick up there next Sunday. Thank you all.